Okay, so as I said in the email that went out a couple of days ago, what I was thinking of talking about today is some lines from a wonderful piece of verse by a Tibetan teacher, Nyingma Shokgen Rinpoche, which have become quite well known. And I just feel there's so much value and teaching in them that it's just worth thinking about them and diving into them a bit. And so the full quote goes, "Rest in natural great peace, this exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara." Maybe I just say it again, just because it's so much in it. "Rest in natural great peace, this exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara." So, where should we start with this? Rest, rest, rest. I think rest is what we all look forward to, resting in peace. The Dalai Lama once said, "In the final analysis, the hope of every person is simply peace of mind." That if we look at whatever we're doing, in one way or another, maybe devious at times, but in one way or another, whatever we're doing it in the hope that we actually are going to feel more at ease, more peaceful for doing it. So in a way, peace is what we're looking for. We put different words on it, but I mean, it's a fundamental thing. In fact, when we think about it, what do we put on people's gravestones? Like, "Rest in peace. Finally, this whole ordeal is over." You can rest in peace. So there's something, even just that, just the resting in peace is something really fundamental, I think, to what we all want. And the resting as well, it's not like doing something. It's not like going and finding peace or creating peace. It's actually the opposite. The resting is relaxing, allowing the mind to relax and to settle down. So it's coming to rest. So in that sense, it's not doing, it's not trying to get anywhere. It's just allowing ourselves to come to rest. And this exhausted mind, I think we all probably have noticed this at times. I do, when I'm sometimes meditating and the thoughts begin to quieten down, I step back and it's like I realize, oh my God, how much tension there is in thinking and how tired one can get from thinking. The mind gets exhausted by all the thinking we get caught up in and things we have to attend to. So we want to rest this exhausted mind. But what's, I think, most interesting about this first opening is the natural great peace. I mean, great, it's great peace, not just like peace. It's the great peace, which is the peace that is, I consider it as it's a natural aspect of our being. Last time we talked about being and how one of the questions we looked at, are there qualities of being? And I was suggesting being itself doesn't have any qualities, but when we are resting in being, then certain that there are qualities of mind that are there when we're resting in being. And one of those is being at ease, being at peace, along with a sense of mental stillness. So that's the great peace. And it's interesting, I mean, this is coming from Tibetan, but if we look at Indian teachings, there's the word you've often heard, ananda, ananda. It's, almost the one word out of Indian teachings we hear so much. And, so many gurus have ananda at the end of their name, Brahmananda, Shivananda, goodness knows what ananda. And ananda is usually translated as bliss. And I think that came about because, you know, a couple of hundred years ago, Western scholars were going out to India and discovering these new cultures with new religions in new languages. It was all totally new, and trying to understand it, the word bliss got attached to ananda. But if you look at the root meaning of ananda in Sanskrit, the a is means great. The short a, ah, means not, but the long a means great. And nanda means contentment. So the root meaning of ananda in Sanskrit is actually great contentment, which to me is a much better way of relating to ananda. It's like, that's what we feel when the mind becomes still, there's great contentment. And that seems to me a reflection of what the Tibetans are talking about as great peace. And the natural, it's like this is what I call natural mind and natural state of mind. And natural doesn't mean normal. I mean, a normal state of mind, the normal state of the mind is the average state. It's the state where everybody is most of the time. And normal state of mind is not great peace or great contentment. It's the opposite. It's the exhausted mind. It's the worrying, the planning, what do I do next? What's happening? All of that stuff, or getting excited about stuff. That's the normal state of mind. But the natural state of mind, which I would call the unperturbed state of mind, it's when the mind is not caught up in thinking, worry, all that stuff. The natural state of mind is just one of ease, relaxation. I sometimes call it simply the feeling of just being, of being okay. It's the state of just being okay. And it's also a reflection in a way of how things are in the world. If everything is okay in our world, if we're, you know, not in danger, not threatened, if we're feeling there's nothing to worry about in the world, then we feel okay inside. I think there's a natural complement between how things are in the world and how we feel inside. When there's needs to attend to, there's dangers, whatever, we actually step out of that natural state into, whether it's worry, planning, whatever it is, there's something to do, something to take care of. And we move into a sort of dissatisfied state of mind, what the Buddhists call dukkha. It means not being at ease, meaning it's feeling discontent. But I wasn't planning to go into root meanings of Buddhist words today, but dukkha is usually translated as suffering. I think, again, for similar reasons, as, you know, when the early explorers were out looking at the root meaning, looking at the meaning of the words. But the root meaning of dukkha is actually a negation of sukha. And sukha means ease in Pali, the Buddhist language. Sukha means ease. So dukkha means not at ease. We're not feeling at ease. So we're feeling discontent. And that, to me, is a much more, I think, daily interpretation of the word, because we're not at ease most of the time. There's something we're thinking about, worrying about, whatever. And most of our thoughts, if you look about them, are in one way or another, ultimately about how can we come back to being at ease, to being at peace. So this, I see the peace, ease, whatever you want to call it, we can give it many different words: happiness, joy, contentment. We can find many different words for it, and the words themselves don't matter. It's just that quality that's important. That's our natural state of mind. And so, you know, that first line is talking about resting in natural great peace. It's like, allowing the mind to come to rest, allowing the thinking mind to come to rest. And then when we do, we just come back into that feeling of just great peace, contentment, this exhausted mind, resting this exhausted mind. And then it goes on, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts. Karma. again, one way which karma tends to be sort of superficially interpreted is like, oh, you've got good karma, you've got bad karma, or that's my karma. Like there's some sort of cosmic accounting machine out there which says you did wrong, so you're going to get wrong, or you did good, so good things are going to happen to you. I think that's a very superficial idea of karma. It's much more, the root meaning is actually action. It just means action in the world. And so in the sense, when we're acting in the world, then also the world acts upon us. And I think that's more what the karma means here, is the mind is beaten helplessly by all the stuff in the world that comes upon us, all the things we have to do. If we're active in the world, there's all the things that are coming back that we have to respond to, take care of. If you're sitting in a cave meditating, not interacting with the world in any way, then, you know, there isn't karma in that sense much. I mean, maybe there's bad weather or something. But karma in this sense is, because we're interacting with the world, inevitably, beaten helplessly, we can't do anything about it. There's all these things coming at us which we have to attend to, which leads to part of just this exhausted mind that it's talking about. And then, you know, the other side of that is our neurotic thoughts. I should actually emphasize the word is neurotic, as I think a couple of people here in this meeting will know. The workshop I was doing many years ago, there was a misunderstanding. Somebody thought it was erotic thoughts, the mind beaten helplessly by erotic thoughts, which, one form of neurotic thought. But our neurotic thoughts, what I see this is referring to, is all the thoughts we have, the worries, the things we go through again and again, the mind pondering stuff. I mean, it's sometimes said that, you know, 90% of our thoughts are repeats. They're just going over the same stuff again and again, thinking about things just in case or out of habit. You know, it's not to put thoughts down. I mean, thoughts are absolutely wonderful. They're useful. It's what gets us, what makes us human, how we get things done in the world. But there's neurotic thoughts, the thoughts about, oh, what if this were to happen? And I wonder about this, and what's so-and-so thinking? And, oh, that's going to be good. It's like the mind just keeps on chattering away to itself. I think that's the neurotic side of the neurotic thoughts. And again, you know, it's ongoing. It's like it's there nearly all the time, just this neurotic thought. So that's the mind beaten helplessly by the world, what's coming at us, and all this thinking that's going on. And so the admonition here is really to rest the mind, step back from all this thinking, step back from the world for a while, and just let this mind rest in natural great peace. And it's really, I think, what all the great teachers are pointing to in one way or another, different languages, different metaphors, but that's what they're all talking about. I mean, what Jesus was saying, the peace that passeth all understanding, when we let go of all the understanding, go beyond the mind in that sense, then it's the peace we come back to, the peace that passeth all understanding. And then the final bit, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. Samsara, again, the root meaning of samsara is to just wander on, we wander on endlessly. And again, you know, one interpretation of that is we wander on from one lifetime to another. There's the whole cycle of rebirth, the cycle of samsara. But again, a more everyday meaning is we wander on in the world looking for satisfaction, looking for happiness, looking for peace. Ultimately, we wander on from one possibility to another, and sometimes we find it. We do something and we feel happy for a while, but it's a very conditional happiness or conditional peace of mind because we've achieved what we wanted. But it, you know, pretty soon we find something else to be dissatisfied about and something else to chase. And so we wander on just chasing one possible fulfillment to another possible fulfillment. And that is, you know, so much, I think, a description of life in the modern world, in our culture. We just wander on looking for this all the time, from just one possibility to another possibility. And then when we don't find it, we just find more disaffection. That's not working. So that's the world of samsara, as I see it. The world most people live in, most of us, I think, you know, live in a lot of the time. I mean, we can help, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves. It's relentless. It's just samsara is just always coming back, just relentless. The fury of the pounding waves. It's like, it's just, again, for me, this is emphasizing, it's just continually, this is what we are subject to. And the infinite ocean of samsara, it never stops. There's so many possibilities to chase. So that's how I interpret these lines. But I say they are so, I find, you know, so powerful. I know I've used these sometimes in my local meditation group in Tiburon. They've almost become sort of famous points of contemplation in the group. So that's why I decided to talk about it. But also I want to look at how this relates to meditation itself. Because, you know, what meditation really is about allowing the mind to come to rest, to come to peace. But one of the things that I've noticed with meditation, like, it used to be this way for myself, and I see it in other groups and other practices, it's like we can be so busy, perhaps busy is the wrong word, I would say so busy meditating, but so engrossed, or whatever it is, in the meditation itself, whether it's, you know, a mindfulness practice or TM or other practices, there's the practice and the mind is becoming quiet, and which is lovely, but then we actually miss the loveliness of it. We actually don't consciously notice how wonderful it feels when the mind settles down. We don't notice that. And what I found really important in my own practice, this is really what I want to share today, is not just the settling down of the mind, but the actual noticing how that feels, noticing the quality of peace, of ease, and actually enjoying it. Because I think meditation should be enjoyable. I think this is the most important. It shouldn't be a drudge. It shouldn't be something you're trying to do. It shouldn't be an ordeal or whatever it is, or discipline. It should be enjoyable. I think so often we miss the enjoyment. Because as I say, we're so busy meditating, we miss that deep quality of peace and ease that is there. Or if we notice it, we don't pause to really allow it in. And the more we can, what I find is the more we can allow in that enjoyment of how it feels to be settling down, the easier it is to settle down. And this was something that when I started TM, whatever it was, I can't remember now, 50 years ago, more, 60 years ago, no, 50 whatever. One of the things that Maharishi said is that, you know, as the mind settles down, it naturally gets drawn to deeper and deeper levels. So as the mind settles down and notices greater levels of peace and quietness, it's naturally drawn into deeper and deeper levels of quietness. And this is something that really struck me. You know, it goes against the whole idea we have to control the mind, but we almost, it's the opposite. We have to let it go, noticing the peace, and then it's almost like it gravitates down into a quieter and quieter level. And so this is what I like to sort of focus on or look at it in this little meditation we'll do now. We'll meditate for about, I don't know, probably about 10 minutes or so. But really, leading you into some ways of just enjoying how it feels, in noticing more the peace and enjoying that, and noticing how we can just, by letting go, just settle into that more and more easily. So what, I'll ring a bell when we've finished. It will sound like that, or maybe a bit quieter, I hope. But as I said before, don't never rush out of meditation. It's always good just to come out gently. I actually like to turn my video off when I'm leading a meditation. Somehow it just allows me to be more internal, and I'd really encourage any of you who just want to turn your video off while we're meditating. You may find it just helps you sort of just be more with yourself. So yeah, if you just like to settle down, just allow wherever you are, just always find it good just to take a few deeper breaths. Taking a few deeper breaths just allows the body to relax. It's almost a sign to the mind that everything is okay. You can just let go and relax a little more. And then just, first of all, just notice how that feels to relax. I mean, that's the first, just notice how it is when the body relaxes. Any sense of whatever it is, maybe a sense of relief, relaxation, ease, whatever it is. And just appreciate that for a moment. Just notice what you like about that. And as you do, just let the attention coming to this moment, whatever you're hearing, my voice, feelings in the body, other sounds around you, and thoughts. You'll notice thoughts there popping in and out, little thoughts or big thoughts. And just let your attention relax. One way I often talk about in meditation, so often with our attention, we're zoomed in on something, we're focusing the attention, we're zoomed in. I like to think of this as doing the opposite, just letting the attention soften, just letting it zoom out. So you have a more just open, expansive awareness. And again, as you do that, as you just let the attention soften, again, just notice how that feels, whatever it is. I don't necessarily give you words, whatever it is for you, how that feels when you just let go a little bit. And just savor that. So really just allowing ourselves to come back to resting in the present moment, not looking for anything or trying to get anywhere. And as in many practices of meditation, when you find the mind has wandered off on some thought, just choosing not to follow that thought anymore for the moment. You can do that later. Just choosing not to follow it. And again, just letting the attention relax again. Because when we're caught up in a thought, the attention tends to get a little tighter. Just letting the attention relax again. And just noticing that quality of ease that comes as you do that. Just noticing how it feels, what you like about it. You might ask yourself, could you be even more relaxed? Could the mind be even more relaxed in this moment? And if you notice some deeper level of letting go, again, just appreciating how that feels. And something else I like to suggest is, if you're feeling that, you know, a greater sense of lightness, ease, relaxation, relief, openness, whatever it is, and it's something you're liking, just allow an inner smile to be there. I sometimes talk about as letting your being smile. Just allow allowing yourself to smile inside as an appreciation to yourself of just savoring it. And I find that again just allows more of a just letting go into the feeling, into the quietness, into the peace. Not trying to get anywhere or have anything happen, but just coming back to just allowing ourselves to rest in this moment and enjoying how it feels. And just continuing for a couple of minutes, just to allow ourselves to just to soak in it, just to soak in how we're feeling. So, does anyone have any questions yet or comments? I say, if you do, put them in the chat for Linda, and then she can open it up from there.
And Peter, I was thinking of putting in the link to the Rinpoche who does that chant, if you want me to.
Well, actually, I was going to play it at some stage. I've got it.
Awesome.
Maybe I'll play it now. It's just, yeah, it's such while people think about questions. Let me go to share my screen. Where are we? Here we are. I'll allow Zoom to share. Oh God, I've got to do something here.
Okay.
I just upgraded my system, and so that's why. I don't want to record. I can do that later. Okay, let's see if the sharing screen is working now. Yeah.
Great peace, this exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. Rest in that great peace. Rest in natural great peace. Sometimes it's wonderful, and you really remember what the masters have done and taught. It immediately moves us. It really inspires, connects us. Therefore, we feel a sense of gratitude and appreciation of their work. So, using Khyamche in this wonderful poem, he says, "Rest in natural great peace, this exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. Rest in that great peace. Rest in that." In Tibetan is Rangyi Hivacham. Rest in that great peace. This exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. Rest in that, to rest, to find rest. Clear? associated with finding that rest, the comfort and ease to just to let go and just to just naturally be. Then you see the mind just quietly settle, just like a glass of muddy water. If you don't stir it, the dirt will slowly settle. In the same manner, if you let the mind be in the spacious openness, slowly the confusion or the turbulence of thought and motion settles. The rest in natural peace. The rest in natural peace. This exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. Rest in natural peace. To rest. To find rest. Clear?
Well, we've got a bunch of questions now.
Okay.
Okay, the first question is from Jeff. How does the quality of this condition allowed by meditation compare to that which Maharishi shared with you by direct transmission?
Most of the time he wasn't sharing by direct transmission. It was more he was, you know, teaching a practice which allowed oneself to drop into that state. So this is what he was really talking about. He wasn't a teacher most of the time who did a lot of direct transmission teaching. Though I did have one such experience, which was beautiful. It just confirmed the practice. Yep, I'd say it confirmed the practice. Yeah.
Okay. Could you speak to the difference between what I would call obvious neurotic thinking that I can hear, and a train of subliminal thinking that runs like an underground river, and that is, for me, much more difficult to get in touch with, although at some level I know it is running and running on. Mm-hmm. It is the cessation of that river that would produce true peace of mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yes, it's easy to recognize the surface things like the shopping list you're making up in your mind, or what you're going to say when you speak to someone tomorrow, or whatever it is. Did I do the right thing yesterday? Those sorts of thoughts are easy to recognize. But what I find is, as those quieten down, as I settle into meditation, normally meditation, you know, as it starts, it's full of that stuff, first few minutes, but then as I settle down, then those other thoughts begin to become more apparent. It's like, he talks in that tape about the muddy settling, like muddy water settling down becomes clearer. As the mind settles down, I begin to notice this other background stream of things. And the same basic practice, when you notice that, you know, fainter, subtler background of thoughts, and the mind following it, getting interested in it, is just to choose not to follow them. Withdraw your interest, that's another way I put it sometimes, is withdraw your interest in that particular thought. It's going to come back at some stage, that doesn't matter. But just by choosing not to follow it, to withdraw our interest, and just gradually you'll begin to notice quieter and quieter levels of thinking. And sometimes I like to point out to people, they have the idea that, you know, meditation, it's an, you know, we should arrive at this state where there's an absence of all thought. I mean, that is possible, but it doesn't have to happen. You can be in a very quiet, gentle state of meditation, and there can be faint background thoughts there, even like, oh, this is nice, or something like that, or just noticing something. But it's not taking you out of the present. It's when thoughts take us out of the present that we need to step out of them so we can come back to the present. So I would say it's the same basic thing as you notice them, just choosing not to follow. But who was it? Maybe you have more to say on that, whoever was asking that question. You want to unmute them?
Sure, it was CJ, here we go. I'm asking them, there you go.
Hi, Peter. Yeah, it was me, CJ.
Hi.
I find in my meditation that what I describe as the river of thought, which is why your quote at the beginning resonated with me, that river of thought runs quite deep, and it's, for me, difficult to get in touch with. It's almost as if it's there all the time, but not accessible all the time. It's difficult to kind of put this in. There are moments when I'm meditating when it does seem to dry up, and there are then moments of peace, mm-hmm. but most of the time it's almost, if I can relate, you once said about something about the sound of silence, and this may be related or not, and it may sound incoherent, but there is a sort of, I don't suffer from tinnitus, but there is a sort of background noise that is accessible at times, like a hum. Yeah. And it's that has a correlation in my head to this river of thoughts.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Wow. Several things. I mean, in terms of the river of thought, just from what I was saying earlier, a useful question I find is there an easier way of being with this experience? Just asking myself that question, is there an easier way of being, allows the attention to relax. And the more we can allow the attention to relax, the more, the quieter we can become. But this, what you talk about also, the sound of silence. I often hesitate to talk about this because I don't want to give people the idea they're missing something. But what you notice is there is, when the mind is very, very quiet, there is this quality of a background, you call it a hum. It's like a faint white noise, and it's not tinnitus. You're right. Tinnitus, people have tinnitus. They say, you know, it's distressing, they don't like it. This is the opposite. It's very comforting. And for me, it's like a beacon. I call it a beacon, sort of drawing us home. It's like out of the silence, there is this faint, what you call hum. It's different people, I sometimes call it the cosmic crickets. And just by opening to it, I find the mind just settles down even more. In fact, a Buddhist teacher, Ajahn Sumedho, he wrote a book on this called The Sound of Silence. And he was saying, you know, when you notice that, let your attention be there. Let that be let that be where you rest your attention. It's almost like the threshold of the stillness. It comes out of the stillness. So when you notice that, yeah, just be with it. Just be with it if you notice it. And sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. My own personal feeling is this is what the ancient teachers were talking about when they talked about Om. You know, today we have it as some chant that we say, but you look at the definitions of Om in terms of its, you know, that background vibration of the cosmos, the background vibration of the mind, that the cosmic hum, it's that's all possible frequencies. That to me fits that definition much more than looking for some sort of sound out there in the world that we're trying to make. Anyway, that's a whole other topic, but I didn't mean to go, but thank you for touching on it. I hope it helps some people.
So I have another message from Karen Buckley. In the video, most of the images were either nature or one person. Few showed connection with life, one with elephant and two with snow leopard. Would you speak to the difference between cultivating natural peace alone versus in interaction with another, with a beloved, with the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Karen. I think what comes first is coming back to nurturing, not even nurturing the peace, but coming back to being more open in oneself to that peace. And something I didn't say, but just to say, I think it's important. It's not just doing it in sort of meditation, like a sitting meditation. With all these practices, I think that, you know, we can take them out into our daily life. And so at any moment, and this is what I, you know, intend to do as much as possible, it's not always I get so caught up in things, but at any moment, just saying to myself, you know, can I be more at ease in this? Can I be more at peace in this? So that we're beginning to connect with this deeper quality in our life. And I think this naturally opens us up to being more open, loving in our relationship to other people, to the rest of the world. Because what gets in the way of that is our, to quote that line, our neurotic thinking. It's like our thinking, our judgments, our more self-centered needs, desires, that sort of thing. They keep us focused on ourself, and yeah, keep us focused much more on ourself and our own needs and what we're thinking and our fears. As those drop away more, and the more we can just be in touch with that inner quality of peace, the more open we can be to others. It frees us up to be more open and caring and relating to others in a way that allows them to be more at peace. Because if we're, you know, the way, you know, we can fall into relating to others is, you know, it can be through judgment, attack, or manipulation or something. And often that actually can lead to other people being less at peace. So I think the more we can feel that in ourselves and open to that, I think the more we can open up to others and be at peace with them and find ways to allow them to be more at peace. I know, Karen, do you want to say anything else on that? I know you always have wonderful insights.
Yeah. Okay, I think I got unmuted in all of that back and forth with Linda. And then Rick had a follow-on question if there's space for that. Mike, I appreciated your answer, Peter. That certainly is my experience, and I'd say our experience here in the home is when one of us is more relaxed in that centered place of peace, everybody's happier. The dog is happier, you know. The everything seems to grow better in the garden. The food tastes better. Those very pragmatic aspects of life. I've always been intrigued by the tension between being a householder and meditating, tending to what needs to be tended to, and at the same time, finding enough time for the alone, but also enough time for finding peace in the exchange and the sharing and the exchange with others and with life. The place that I was noticing as I watched the video was actually the place I touched sometimes of yearning to have that much, to have constructed my life in such a way that I have that much alone time in order to find and strengthen the peace inside myself. And then at the same time, knowing I absolutely love my life and I wouldn't give up a stitch of it, or I would have. But that marvelous combination between, I guess, the yearning in both directions and really finding a way to touch the peace, no matter where I am, mm-hmm. no matter who I'm with, no matter what story I get caught in or what story they get caught in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. Lovely. Thank you. Mm. Rick, you had something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I was just going to contribute a comment, which is when I experience occasionally the hum or the crickets, I also experience light with it. And in that is a feeling of pleasure. I mean, an incredibly pleasurable experience. Mm. The other thing I was, my question is that, you know, with humanity rising, we hear many more people speaking about meditation being for the planet, for the human community, moving beyond the self. And I was curious with what you were saying, is there a correlation with the
heart coherence?
The heart coherence that people are practicing, is that one access point, or is it above, in levels above? It's a way of people trying to connect with their hearts. And I was mm-hmm. curious if it connects with what you're saying.
I think so. I mean, you're talking about heart mass and work they've done with meditation and the radiation from the heart that you can detect.
But more the global meditations that are going on right now.
Yeah. I don't know so much about them. There's interesting evidence of how these global meditations, you know, they're using these quantum machines that sort of detecting variations, and the evidence is quite interesting. It's almost compelling what's happening. I think my attitude to it is, if that's going on, that's great, but not to get caught up in how's this affecting the vibrations in the world, to put it that way. I think the important thing is what I was saying in a way to Karen's question, is like deepening my own practice in whatever ways I can, and knowing that reverberation will go out into the world I interact with, the people, whatever it is, the animals, however I interact with the world, I know that's happening. And the other stuff is, it's fascinating and wonderful, and let it be. Yeah.
Thanks.
Back to you, Linda. Any other, you said there's plenty of questions.
Yeah, I've got a couple more questions, so let's go on. You mentioned, this is from James Monroe, you mentioned the word feeling a couple of times. In relating this to meditation, are we developing our ability to feel which over time fosters our intuition so that our actions in the world come from that deeper level.
Yeah, yeah. Question. Thanks, James. Why don't you unmute, James? Nice to see you again. Whatever. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here. Good morning. Good morning.
Feelings. What I was talking about in the meditation was like, we use feelings in different ways. Let me say that, you know, we talk about feelings in the body, you know, a sensation, an itch or something. And then there's feelings as emotions. And then there's what I was talking about, was a slightly different sense of feeling, is what is the inner quality, like how it, so just like feeling how the mind feels, in a way, how our being feels. Does it feel at ease or do we feel tense inside? Is that quality I was pointing to? And say again your question, because I lost, there were several things in it.
No, I was trying to, actually it's based on my own experience. I mean, the longer that I've been doing meditation, actually, I think I'm aware more of my feelings than I were before, than I was before.
Yeah.
And that actually has evolved into, items will come up in my mind where I just act. I don't really think about them. I mean, I tried an easy things initially where, okay, I might be watching a movie at home. The feeling comes out, well, I really don't need to watch the end of this. I just switch it off. I know it sounds a little kind of silly in a way, but in some way that has actually kind of strengthened the actual connection to the feeling. So what I was pointing out here is that the more that I've been in the practice, the more feeling comes up that I can actually act upon, and it seemed to be the right decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was trying to say in a great, kind of garbled way.
That's good. Yeah. I think, you know, what you're talking about, there's several things in here, but I think the main thing is when we're caught up in our, you know, our exhausted mind, our neurotic thoughts and all of that, that's like, I think there's a veil that's there on the surface. It's the muddy waters, the Rinpoche was talking about. As that quietens down, as the mind quietens down, we're more open to noticing what's happening at quieter levels. And some of that may be feelings in the emotional sense of, you know, as the mind quietens down, you might notice, oh, there's a sense of whatever, there's a background sense of whatever. It could be hope or sadness or excitement or unease, but there's a background sense of feeling. But also, I think what you're pointing to is we have an inner, what I call it, an inner knowing, an inner wisdom, which comes out of that deeper quality of being. There's a natural wisdom that isn't shrouded or isn't colored, but the best way, it isn't colored by the thinking mind and its needs and what it wants and all that stuff. So we're more in touch with that inner knowing. I think that's what you're pointing to. And so the inner knowing is in all these things which almost we're socialized into doing. It's like we don't realize it, but we're socially conditioned. Oh, this is what I should be doing. I should be watching this movie or doing that. And then as the mind gets quieter, it's like, oh, hang on, you know, that's not so true. I don't need to be doing that. So I think that's what you're pointing to, right? So I think it's a natural consequence of the mind settling down. That we're just, put it very simply, the more the mind quietens down, the more in touch we are with our real self. The neurotic mind is in touch with all the egoic thinking, but the more that settles down, the more we're in touch with our own self, our own inner truth.
Great. Thank you, James. So, Pete, we have two more questions and one hand is raised. Oh, I guess you unraised it. That was Helga. So let me read you the last question. I think it's...
Yeah.
Let's see. is the this is from Ian Matthews, Zenba. Is the meditative process one of resonating with the source or resting the mind to allow the source to arise like a wellspring?
They're both very similar. I would say it's allowing ourselves to settle back into source, if you want to use the word source or essence. It's settling back into it. But as we do, it obviously, what I've been saying, it tends to be more apparent in our daily life. So you could talk of that as it arising. What was the first part of the question? Is it?
It was, is the meditative process one of resonating with the source or resonating the mind?
Yeah. The resonating bit. I get very finicky with words, as people know me, but I think it's important, because it's like resonating with source is like it's a dualistic statement in the like there's something, there's a me that is resonating with source, which is me. And so it's like I wouldn't put it that way. It's like I am. Source is recognizing itself more. Source, which, you know, is just our beingness, is usually gets caught up in where the attention is on the outside world. All our thoughts about, you know, I call them attention on the outside world in our thoughts. It's allowing our minds to relax so that what you call source can recognize itself. I think that's the way I'd put it.
Okay, and there's two other things. There's Dune had her hand up, Helga had her hand up, and now one last question, and that'll be the end. The last question is from Ken Crittenden. He said, I'll ask this in a metaphorical way. Are the crickets telling us something, or are they wooing us into deep peace? Neither or both?
obviously neither and both. Are they telling us something? I don't think they're telling us anything in the way of information. They are showing us something. They're showing they're revealing something, a deep quality. They're revealing how it's like they're the sound of silence. They're revealing that. And so what was the second part of what Ken was saying? Are they telling us something, or are they
wooing us into deeper space?
Yes, I would say that they're luring us. That's what I find. It's like
wooing us into deeper peace.
Yeah, wooing us. The more, if you just, it's like they're the sound of silence. They're a very comfortable way of just being with the stillness, being with the silence. And
And I missed a question before I call on the two hands that were raised, and then we will be done. Sometimes in deep meditation, the screen of my mind goes blank and then opens up into something that looks like stars in the nighttime sky. Is this a common experience? This is from BRT.
Common experience is something that, yes, not common in the sense that everybody has that, but there are various experiences like that which come from just really the mind quieting down and opening up to things. I would say with those things, don't pay them any undue attention. Don't get into what's it all about, what's the significance. Those things are usually quite peaceful. Allow them to be there. Just allow them to be there. But don't get too enraptured by them or trying to work them out. They're just allow them to be there.
Okay, I'm going to go to Helga and then to Dune. So let me get Helga to unmute. Thank you, Helga. Nope, she's not unmuted yet. You're not unmuted yet, Helga?
Sorry. This is my first Zoom experience, so I'm asking for forgiveness here. It was a brave step for me here. But I have listened to you, and I'd just like to share something. I'm a long-term meditation person. And several weeks ago, I read about the Blue Room. And I live on the East Coast, and it opened up in Warrington, Virginia. And so I went there out of sheer curiosity. And that was a 20-minute experience. And 2 hours later, when I returned home, I began to gradually feel an enormous inner peace settling in. And after that, the left side of my brain was switched off. Now, I've had various experiences with that, but it was fairly unusual. All of a sudden, there I was, quite harmonious, quite integrated, very innerly peaceful, but there was no chatting, nothing. It lasted for several days, and the world could have come to an end, and it didn't matter to me. It gradually came back, but not to ever the way it was before. So I waited for 2 weeks, and then I returned to the Zoo Room, the second time, the Blue Room. The experience happened again, but not as cut try as it was the first time around. But, you know, be honestly, my life has not been the same since. And so I have found it rather curious to listen to you people here. Because, yes, I'm coming back to some chatter, but it is actually right like an observer rather than an actual participant. So I wanted to share the experience with you. That's all. Thank you.
Lovely. Lovely to hear. Yes, these experiences are so precious, so precious. And a wonderful confirmation, I think, as well. It's just like, yes, this can happen. And yeah, wonderful. The more, the better. The more of that, the better. Great. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Dune, we're going to go out on you, or at least you'll be the last one.
I just really wanted to say thank you, Pete. It was really beautiful. I loved all the visuals, of course, but also your description of the root meanings of some of those words really added a lot of layers and depth, and the meditation was beautiful. So it was just a thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you, everybody who was here.